doing a little bit of review. Remember, last week we discussed Shlomo's decision to kill his brother Adoniyahu. His mother had come to him at Adoniyahu's behest. Adoniyahu wished to marry Avishag, and Bathsheba took this as sincere, perhaps naively. That was Shlomo's position. And Shlomo takes it as an act of rebellion. We spoke a little bit about it. The Rambam's ruling that Avishag had the status of a shivcha, of a melech, which can only be used by another melech. And so this was Shlomo's conclusion, rebellion. We looked at it from a variety of different perspectives. And Bathsheba had clearly a different point of view. And her point of view was, maybe this is good, it gets Avishag out of the palace. She doesn't really want Avishag around Shlomo. Maybe more significantly, the idea is that this will placate Adoniyahu. This will assure that he won't rebel. And then my preferred view, which is that maybe this is why Adoniyahu wanted to be the king in the first place. So we don't hear anything about Adoniyahu's aspirations to be the king until we learn about the entrance of this Na'ara Yafad Ma'od into the life of David HaMelech. And it certainly requires us to think a little bit about Shlomo taking a position here which is very much against his mother's instincts. And it forces us to confront a question, which is, was Shlomo correct? Was this really necessary? You know, he is, of course, as we noted, meant to be different than his father. David can't build the Beis HaMikdash because he's a man of war. Ish milchamosata, vidam larov shafachta, as he's told. And Shlomo comes from the word shalom. So Shlomo has to be different. And yet, his first act is to kill somebody against his own mother's better judgment. And speaking of one's mother, my mother is here with us. My mother has been advocating for a number of weeks now. Good to see you, Mom. That it really doesn't make a difference that he sends Benayahu ben Yehoyada to perform the act, right? It's clear that it's at Shlomo's directive. And what does that say to us about Shlomo? Now, that becomes very critical for us in terms of Shlomo, again, is meant, his destiny is to fulfill his father's unfulfilled dream of building the Beis HaMikdash. To do that, he has to be an Ish Menucha, an Ish Sheked, an Ish Shalom. This is not the beginning that we would have imagined. And that really continues, because as we spoke about last week, Shlomo was convinced that Adoniyahu did not sort of think of this on his own. But as we recall, who does Shlomo really blame for this? Who does Shlomo see as fundamentally responsible? If you will, putting Adoniyahu up to it? He doesn't see Adoniyahu as having conceived of this on his own, which I think is questionable, but that's what he concludes. Who does he think is really the...
Yoav.
Right, so Yoav and Eviatar. And he says that. Shlomo doesn't just think that, right? He verbalizes that. He names both of them. And so it's no surprise where the narrative goes. So let's have a look. We go in order: Eviatar, Yoav, and then anybody remember who else David mentioned just before he passed away?
Shimi.
Right, Shimi ben Gera. Excellent. Okay, so we're going to deal with all three of them tonight. The results are really interesting and force us to confront the question anew. Okay, so let's have a look here. Ulaviatar haKohen Aman HaMelech. So this, we have this conjunctive vav over here. So Shlomo immediately turns to Eviatar Aviatar, who had been the Kohen Gadol and who was already deposed from that position during David's own lifetime in favor of Tzadok. So Leviatara Kohen Amar HaMelech Anatot Leich Al Sadecha. You have a house arrest. You have to go to your fields in Anatot. Anatot was a city of Kohanim. We know that from Sefer Yirmiyahu, who was Mina Kohanim Asher Banatot. Ki'ish Maves Ata. You are really deserving of death. Uva Yom Hazeh Lo Amisacha. But I will not put you to death. Not today. Kinasasa Saron Hashem Elokim. Because there was a time when you carried the Aron, and that is to your credit. Lifnei David Avi, v'chi hisanisa b'chol ha'sher hisanavi. And you also suffered along with my father. So you can really see that Shlomo is identifying two different credits or merits that he thinks Aviatar has. One of them is that he served as the Kohen, so you know, that counts for something. The second thing is that he suffered along with David. When David ran away from Avshalom and in various struggles that David had, going back to the persecutions of Shaul, right? So Eviatar suffered along with David, and therefore he's not going to kill him. But rather, Vayigarash Shlomo es Eviasar, so he exiles him, Bios Kohen Lashem, it removes him from the kuna, l'maleas tor Hashem asher diber al beis Eli b'shilo, and this has the secondary function of fulfilling the curse of the house of Eli. You recall that curse of the house of Eli, which is the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Eviatar was from that line of Kohanim, and he's removed from the kuna. Okay, now what I'd like to try to begin with is for somebody to identify the common denominator between the way that Shlomo understands the two merits, the two credits which Eviatar has. What is the Tzad HaShavet? What is the common denominator here? What does the text tell us? I think this is critical to understanding Shlomo's psychology. I'm not saying right, I'm not saying wrong. I think it dovetails very much with what we spoke about last week. Okay, so I mentioned my mother before, so I'll quote my father. It's a very different context. So one of the things I learned from my father was once interviewed in a particular context. I watched the interview, and I learned a lot from the interview. So my father said that what is very important to understand, this is, he was making a professional observation, it says that people sometimes have a story that they tell themselves. And if you can understand that story, the way that they think about themselves in the story, it can be very helpful to understanding why people make certain choices or why people behave in a certain way. So what I'm trying to do is to pin down, what is Shlomo's self-understanding? You can see it right here if you look carefully.
David Amelo. It has something to do with David.
Yeah, who said, I was in screen shares, so I couldn't see, so who said that?
Ira.
Yeah, Ira, excellent. So he's his father's son, right? He wants to be his father's son. You carried the Aron lifnei David Avi, you suffered with my father, and therefore I'm not going to kill you, okay? So I am my father's son. I am loyal to my father. Now that's very interesting, because who did he not listen to?
His father's Yoatzim.
Even more importantly, last week, who did he not listen to?
His mother.
Right, okay, his mother, right? So his mother and his father. So he's what they think they would say in the field. I think he's identified with his father, right? So David Avi, right? David is my father. So that's his thinking. Okay. And what's interesting here too is that Shlomo substitutes gerush, exile, for the death penalty. When's the first time that we see that in Tanakh? I'll give you a hint. You have to go back to the very beginning. Yeah, I think Ruthie said it. Adam and Chava, right? They deserve to die, but they're kicked out of Gan Eden. What's the next time that we see it?
fight.
Yeah, right? He kills Hevel, but he's Navanad. He's sent into exile. This is, you know, obviously a well-worn path. There's something else here, which, you know, I thought was such an interesting observation. So Shlomo says he's not going to kill the Kohen. He's going to exile the Kohen. So the Abravanel makes the observation that even though Shlomo attributes it to two things, in other words, that Eviatar suffered when David suffered, and that he carried the Aron for David, why in Shaul's mind might killing Eviatar be a very bad idea? And I have to credit the Abravanel as the one who made this observation. I thought it was very cogent.
Maybe because how the city of Nob was killed in Kohanim, he doesn't want to come close to that.
Yeah. Hit the nail on the head, Ruthie. Right? So this is the undoing of Shaul, the killing of Nob, Ira Kohanim, Eviatar, the sole survivor. So Shlomo sort of edges away from that. He says, Ishma Vesata, you really deserve it, but I'm going to opt for the biblical substitute for death, which is exile. Okay, so that's Eviatar. Eva, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just don't understand. I mean, he dismisses him from his office as a priest. I mean, isn't he being a Cohen? How can he be dismissed from his office as a priest? He's a Cohen. He's always going to be a Cohen, even if I know that. That the Lord had spoken about the house of Eli, but I still don't understand. As long as he's alive, he's a priest.
Yeah, it's a good point. Right. You can't really fire somebody from being a Kohen. But you can prevent them from serving as a Kohen. Point well taken. Okay, so Yoav is next up, right? Again, Eviatar and Yoav were named together. V'ashmu'abad Yoav. Remember, Yoav, it's really interesting. You go back to the first chapter, you have this phenomenon also, where Yoav was the one who heard when Shlomo was installed, when he was inaugurated. So Yoav has a very good sense of hearing. So v'ashmu'abad Yoav, he's always sort of on edge. He always hears what's going on. Ki Yoav nata acharei Adoniyahu, v'acharei Avshalom lo nata. Right? It's interesting. He had an opportunity to rebel earlier, but he didn't join the rebellion of Avshalom. He davka joined the rebellion of Adoniyah. Vayanos Yoav el Oel Hashem. So Yoav runs to the Oel Hashem. Vayachazek bekarnos hamizbeach. And he holds on to the karnos hamizbeach. Right? This is the same move that Adoniyahu did. Maybe he's hoping that he could get a similar result and get the death penalty state. Vayugad lamelech Shlomo, kinas Yoav el Ohel Hashem, v'nei tzal mizbeach, v'yishlach Shlomo et Benayahu ben Yehoyada, le'mor leich pegabo. He sends Benayahu to kill him. So vayavo Benayahu el Ohel Hashem, third time in three psukim that we have this expression, Ohel Hashem, Ohel Hashem, Ohel Hashem, it's unmistakable, right? This is the proto-mikdash, this will be one day turned into the Beis HaMikdash, and the it's not supposed to be any bloodshed there, but this is what Shlomo wants. Say, you have to leave this space. Vayomer lo ki po amus. So Yoav says, no, I'm going to die here. Vayashev binayahu et amelech davar limor ko diber Yoav v'choanani. So binayahu doesn't kill him because binayahu was hesitating. He said, I don't know if Shlomo would really want me to kill him right then and there. Right? So he reports the conversation back exactly as it was. Reports the conversation to Shlomo. Now, I have to say, this is actually very much to his credit, right? Because Benayahu obviously stood to become the next chief of staff of the army. And the fact that Benayahu isn't running to kill Yoav, but he's, you know, circumspect about it, that is, again, pointed out by the Abravanel, but very much to his credit. He's not an opportunist. So Vayomer lo Hamelach. So Shlomo says to him, fine, he wants to die there, kill him there. Asay kasher diber, ufigabo, slay him, ukivarto, but make sure to bury him, he deserves that. Vasirosa demechina masher shafach yoav me alai, ume al beisavi. And so that finally, all of the innocent blood that Yoav shed will be exonerated of me and of my father's house. Again, my father, my father, my father, my father. This is the just deserts for his killing, first of Avner ben Ner, then Amasa ben Yeter, Avi David lo yada. My father had nothing to do with it, and yet by implication, my father stood to be blamed. As Avner ben Ner sartzva Yisrael, but Amasa ben Yeter sartzva Yehuda. V'shavu d'mehem b'rosh Yoav v'rosh Zaro le'olam. Ule David, Ule Zaro, Ule Beiso, Ule Chiso, Yashalom Adolam Me'im Hashem. And by expunging this innocent blood, so I'm guaranteeing peace to my father's house, which is channeled through me. So Binayahu does as he's told. Vayal Binayahu Ben Yehoyada, Vayifgabo, and he slays Yoav right then and there in the Oel Hashem. In the Mikdash, Vayamisehu, Vayikaver Beveso Bamidbar. And he's buried. Just like Shlomo said, he deserved that. He was buried in his family plot. And immediately, right now that Eviatar and Yoav are removed from the scene, Vayitain HaMelech El Binayahu Ven Yehoyada Tachtav Al Hatzava, Binayahu becomes the lead general of the army, the Ramatkal. Ve'tzadok ha-kohen asan ha-melech tachas Eviasar, and Tzadok is formally appointed to the office of Kohen Gadol. Finally, Shimi ben Gera, and then we'll come back and discuss. So, Vayishlach ha-melech vayikra l'Shimi. Remember, this is the person that David named. David had named three people. Yoav is now dead. Right, Barzilai ha-Giladi, we haven't seen yet, but Shlomo was supposed to do chesed with Barzilai. And Shimi ben Gera. Shimi had again cursed David on the day that David had, you know, been chased out of Yerushalayim by Avshalom. So Vayishlach HaMelech Vayikra LeShimi Vayomer Lo, right? Shimi hasn't been involved in any rebellion, so there's no pretext. B'nei Lecha Bayis B'Yerushalayim, build yourself a house in Jerusalem. V'yashavta Tasham V'lo Seitze Misham Ana V'Ana. House arrest. V'ayam B'yom Tzeischa. When you leave, if you should violate the terms of this house arrest, v'avartas nachal kidron, and you go out of Jerusalem past this stream, the Gichon, the nachal kidron, yadoa teda ki mos tamos damcha yaveroshecha. That's a death sentence. So Shimi says, fine. Vayomer Shimi lamelech tova davar kasher diber adoni hamelech ken yaseh avdacha. Vayeshev Shimi b'Yerushalayim yamim rabim, and he honors the terms of his house arrest. Vayimiket Shaloshanim, 3 years later, Vayivrchu Shnei Avadim L'Shimi El Achish Ben Macha Melech Gat. So two of his slaves ran away, lo and behold, to Achish, the king of Gat. Vayagidu L'Shimi Leimor, Hinei Avadecha. Right, so David had taken refuge amongst the Plishtim. Okay, good.
Sheva? No.
certainly a metaphor there, in terms of the way that Shlomo perceives it. So Vayigad l'Shlomo ki alach shemi Yerushalayim gat vayashov vayishlach hamelech vayikra l'shemi vayomer lav halo yishpaticha v'ashem. We had a deal. Vayid b'chalimor b'yom tzeischa v'alach dana v'ana yadoa teda kimos tamos. You knew what the terms were. V'tomer ilai tova davar shamati. And you said you agreed. Why did you violate the terms of the deal? Shimi doesn't say anything. You know very well all of the terrible things that you did. What you did to my father. What Yoav, you did to my father. Right? Eviatar, I'm not going to kill you because of what you did for my father. Right? There's one thread here. So what you did to my father, Ve'yishiv Hashem Esrascha Beroshecha, Ve'melech Shlomo Baruch, and I will be blessed. This is important to say to Shimi, because Shimi is the one who cursed. Ve'chisei David Yanachon, Lifnei Hashem Ad Olam. This will strengthen my father's dynasty. Vayitzav HaMelech Az Binayahu Bnei Yehoyada, the man of the hour. Vayetze Vayifgabo Vayamos. This is number three for Binayahu. First Adoniyahu, then Yoav, now Shimi. V'hamlamlacha Nechona B'yad Shlomo. Rashi says, Lo Nena Shal Kolela. It was all legitimate. Okay. So Shlomo's motivations are clear. You can sum it up in two different words. David Avi. Now let's discuss. Rashi's take is all legitimate. Shimi violated the terms of his house arrest, but he's really being killed for cursing David on that day. Yoav was implicated in the rebellion of Adoniyahu, but more importantly, had severely harmed David's reputation in the context of the murder of Avner and Amasa. And Eviatar was an Ishmaavis. He deserved to die because Shlomo was convinced that he put Adoniyahu up to the Avishag proposal. But you suffered with my father. You carried the Aron from my father. So you're going to go to house arrest. Shlomo's motivation is not in question. He understands himself as very much carrying on the will of his father. Now let's ask a different question. Is Shlomo justified? The answer could be yes, the answer could be no. The answer could be maybe it depends on the case. Eviatar, Yoav, Shimi.
I thought it was interesting because he was in the Ohel Hashem, and he never actually, Benayahu never really had to kill him there. I thought it was kind of a harsh thing to do. The guy would have to leave at some point. Can't just like subsist there and stand there forever.
Okay, so Shachar.
But with Yoav, he could be a Goel Hadam, even though he's not family.
I'm saying, like, he was the guy who, I might be a confusing person, but the person who was holding on to the, you know, holding on to the, like, the edges of the Mizbeah, Netanyahu was saying, I'm not sure if I really want to kill this person here, right? You know, in the house of God, Ohel Hashem. And Shlomo is like, no, you go ahead, you kill this guy. Like, he needs food, he needs water. He's got to leave the, you know, he's got to leave at some point, or he'll die there anyway. I thought that was a little bit kind of harsh.
So not, you're saying, so Shachar wants to say, it's not a problem so much that he killed him, but it's where he killed him. That was the problem.
I think it shows a little bit of, like, Shlomo's edge. He didn't really need to do that. I thought, and he kind of just, you didn't have to kill him in that spot also. You could just drag him out also and then kill him.
Okay.
It sounds to me like Shlomo was looking for some kind of pretext, any reason to kill Shimi.
Okay.
Isn't there an issue with Tuma in the Ohel?
Sure. And Binayahu is actually a Kohen. Makes it even more complicated. There's a huge literature on that.
Such an assassin. It's crazy. He just kills everybody, like, no problem. You know, just like he walks up to people and just gets them. It's like nobody fights back. I also think that's kind of fascinating.
Herb, I think you might be on mute.
I think that Shlomo has shown himself to be far more decisive than anyone expected. And he, in one fell swoop, in a sense, has cleared the field of anyone who might challenge his rule, as well as having an obligation, I think, to avenge his father. And that, I think, explains to me his intensity, his determination to carry out these executions, despite all rationale that might justify a lesser sentence.
Is it justified?
In his mind. In his mind.
In your mind.
In my mind, I think, as has been said, it becomes a little bit more extreme, especially in the Ohel, where there might have been another solution. But it explains the determination that controls his acts.
I think I would agree. I think Shlomo's motivation is beyond question. He sees his responsibility to secure his father's dynasty. He thinks he's acting in the best interests of his father. He says it time and again, David, 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 David. It explains everything that he does. The question is this really serving the interests of his father, right? His father's dream is to build the Beis HaMikdash. So Shachar is really taking issue with the fact that he has Yoav killed. Binayahu himself wasn't sure whether to do it in the Ohel Hashem. I think maybe it was Sam before, but somebody started to say, I actually think the far more questionable act is killing Shimi. Yoav at least is a murderer. You know, you can always make the case that killing murderers is, you know, in the broader interest of peace. You can make that case. A person can disagree, but you know that case can be made. But Shimi, the guy left house arrest for 5 minutes. Pretext is absolutely the term. But again, you know he had cursed David.
He was married to Malchus, right?
Right. But David looked the other way on it. David supposedly, right, the Ish Milchamos, the man with blood on his hand, he let that one go. It's true, at the end of his life, he told Shlomo that he should, you know, avenge that. And Shlomo does, and he comes up with some pretext for so doing. But, you know, of the first four things that Shlomo does, three of them are killing somebody, and the fourth one is, okay, I would kill you, but you were good to my father, so you go to house arrest. So, I mean, I agree with Herb that the term decisive is an appropriate one, but it's not like, you know, he's very decisive and he always gets, you know, the mushroom pizza. You know, there could be people very decisive about that. He's very decisive with respect to, you know, taking very, very aggressive action.
But Shimi has violated the agreement. He has challenged the king. So he has certainly been willing to indicate that he is ready to go beyond that should he be left entirely to himself, despite the fact that he had violated their agreement.
So, I have a hard time with that, and here's why, Herb. Like, he wasn't like, you know, the Navi says that, you know, he was kind of sneaking out every night, seeing if anybody would notice if he went past the Nachal Kidron. It seems like the Navi goes out of its way to say he observed the agreement to the absolute letter of the law. Then he heard that two of his slaves ran away, so what he did was he, you know, went, and he got them, and then he came back. It seems like a pretext to me. Eva, I think, you wanted to comment.
I'm sort of leaning more toward her. It is a pretext. Basically, Shlomo is just interested in fulfilling the words that his father gave him orders. He's looking for a pretext or a way to fill it and then still say, I'm not a man of war. I did this, and there's going to be peace now in my house because I did what my father wanted me to do, and I did it correctly and everything. So I think it's more that he's trying to convince himself and convince the Almighty that what he's doing right, whether he believes it or not, he's trying to, that's what he's saying out loud, because he wants to. And then it's a power thing too. He's the king, and here's somebody who made a promise to him and broke it. Even if it was a trivial break, he broke it. He has to show that he's the powerful king, so he has to go in and room with his threat. So I'm not saying it's right, but I'm saying I think that's his motivation.
Right, and that's what's left for us, is to evaluate, is that a justification? Right? You know, this is... I don't think this is what we expected, right? Shlomo is supposed to be the Ish Shalom. Now, you can argue that, you know, peace requires ruling with a very firm hand, but this is like, you know, beyond that. So, Elisheva, go ahead.
Well, we see with Shimi ben Gera that these events didn't necessarily happen one right after the other. The events with Shimi happened, they say, at the end of 3 years. So the Navi has chosen to put these three events next to each other, not necessarily because they happened within the span of a week or even the span of a month. They specifically said, let's take these three events that happened and splice them together, which makes me think that the Navi is trying to tell us something about these actions that they took and the ways in which they speak to his character and the persona he's building up, that maybe it isn't just, you know, him taking care of his father's business, but he, these are events that happened over the span of a couple of years that maybe speak to maybe some wrongdoing.
Oh, so you're taking, it's a good observation that it happens over time. So what conclusion do you draw on that basis? You're concluding that the Navi is taking a supportive position, or is it
to have space these out when they happened, and then maybe you could, like, you know, look at them more individually for their own merits. But to me, the fact that they put them all together is trying to get across a strong message.
And how do you understand that message?
I mean, I guess you don't need to interpret it in this way, but I'm feeling like the Navi views this as forceful, maybe too aggressive.
Very good.
Especially because it, you know, what you said about emphasizing that something happened that made Shimi break his house arrest.
Okay. Excellent. Dad.
Rabbi, do we know who told Shlomo? Would it be?
It's interesting. A lot of the Mefarshim comments is that that's why he made him build his house in Yerushalayim, because that way he would definitely find out. This wasn't in the boondock somewhere. It was right in the capital city. Dad, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm with Herb. You know, I think the Middle East has always been a very tough neighborhood. And if you're going to establish the Davidic dynasty to be a peaceful monarchy, to lead to the Messianic era, you have to have a credible threat of military force. And if you juxtapose these two stories, certainly, if you want to ask who had alternatives, it was Shimmy. He could have sent somebody else to go get his two servants. He was clearly being Moreh B'Malchut again. He got off the hook many years earlier with David for being a Moreh B'Malchut, and he didn't get away with it on round two. David instructed him to take care of the problem. God clearly agreed with what Shlomo did by saying it was Nachon. And if you go back to the Yoav story of, you know, going to the Ohel, I'm not so sure he would ever have gotten out of there, because it's quite likely that he had supporters, all of Adonia's people, and they could have fed him and kept him there forever, just like the modern-day terrorists that hold up in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. They would have stayed there forever because they had local support. There had to be a military solution. So, you know, I think that what the Navi is saying is, if you want to establish a peaceful dynasty in the Middle East, you got to be pretty tough.
Okay, so that's definitely, I think that's a very good summation of Shlomo's way of thinking about this, and he definitely thinks that he's doing what his father asked or wanted him to do. So with that, I thought I would just spend the last few minutes introducing you to a really fascinating Gemara that amplifies this conversation between Yoav and Benayahu at that moment where Benayahu says, oh, you have to leave, maybe I have to kill you, and Yoav says, no, I'm going to die here. So let me take you to that. And I think that this will be kind of a shocking perspective, but one that's very important to enrich the conversation. Okay, so Vayashu Benayahu as HaMelech Davar Kodiber Yoav Echoanani. So Amalei, so he says to him, Zil Emalei Tarte Lo Sa'avid Bahai Gavra. So Yoav basically says, go back to Shlomo and tell him the following. You can't punish me twice. Ikat leslei kibul letuse delatia avucha. If you kill me, then all the curses that your father put on me will go on you. Remember, after Yoav killed Avner, David issued this horrible curse against the house of Yoav, who's his own nephew. So Yoav says to Shlomo, fine, you want to kill me, kill me, but then the curses are on you, because then you're really the violent man. And if you don't kill me, so then the curses of your father will stay on me. V'ilo, shavke deleku bilatuse delati avuch. So if you don't kill me, so then your father's curses will come true. In other words, this is the moment where we're going to figure out who really is the Ish Damim, who is the man with blood in his hands. So the Gemara says, Vayomer lo hamelech. So Shlomo says to Benayahu, Asay kasher diber. Okay, Yoav's right. Kill him right then and there. Ufagabo v'kvarto. Amar Yehuda Merav kol kolalo shekil el David es Yoav nizkaimu bizaru shel David. That at that moment Shlomo said, fine, Yoav, I accept the terms of your deal. I will be the man of blood. All the curses on my father that my father put on you will now come on me. And there were five curses that David said. Al Yikaris Mibes Yoav Zav, one, Mitzorah two, Machzik Bipelach, Nofel Bacherev, Vachaser Lechem. Zav Me Rechavam, Shlomo's own son, Dechsiv Amelech Rechavam, Hisameitz Lalos B'merkava L'anus Yerushalayim, that Rechavam was a Zav. He was somebody who had these terrible bodily afflictions. Mitzorim Yuziyahu, a later king in the Davidic line, Dechsiv V'chez Kaso, Gvali Bo, Ad HaShchus, V'yimoh L'Hashem L'Kav, V'yavol Heichal Hashem L'Hakter, Al Mizbeach HaKtores, he wanted to be a Kohen also, Uksiv HaTzaraz Zarcha B'mitzcho, that he became a Mitzorah. Machazik B'pelach, walking on a cane, Me'asa Dechsiv Rakei Ziknaso Chalos Raglav, he became incapable of walking. Nofil b'cherev Yoshio, a righteous king. D'chsev v'yoru la'melech Yoshio. V'amar Yehuda merav sh'asu kol gufo kikavra. Right, that his body became like a sieve. He was wounded by 300 arrows and died. V'chaser lechem yichonia. This is the second to last king of the Davidic line. D'chsev aruchasa aruchas tamid nisna lo. V'amar Yehuda merav hanu dam yinshi. The conclusion of the story is, Tehe Luta, better to be cursed, Velo Tehe le'ata, and don't be one who curses. Because when you curse, as David did, it all came back to his household. And it came back to his household because in this moment, Shlomo chose the path of violence. And Yoav said to him, your father cursed me because I was a violent person. If you choose to kill me, then all of the curses that your father said of me will come to pass in your descendants. They will metastasize within your household. And the Gemara's telling is fascinating, because Shlomo says, fine. He accepts that judgment. He kills Yoav. And that's what happened. All five of the things, as the Gemara documents, happened to Shlomo's descendants. So what the Gemara seems to be saying is that Shlomo deliberately, knowingly chose this act of violence. And therefore, the curse of... And this is the fascinating part to me. Right? Shlomo says, I'm honoring my father. And Yoav says, you're honoring your father? Do you know that your father cursed me for my violence? And this is your way of honoring your father? And the Gemara seems to side with Yoav. See, here you have, again, this is what makes studying Navi so fascinating. You know, you could read the parak and say, V'amlacha nechona b'yad shmolamo, everything is great. Rashi says, yeah, lo nena shal kolela, this is all fine. The Gemara tells a very different story. That Shlomo is not beginning in peace, but he's beginning in violence. And if his whole motivation, right, is to fulfill his father's dream of a great dynasty, then what has he just done? He's brought these five curses of Zav, Mitzora, Machazik Bepelach, Harug Becharev, and Chasar Lachem onto his own family. And here I just want to give my father interject, and then I have just one more sentence about this, because I think that this is kind of a tension that Shlomo is trying to figure out how to balance. Because I think that David actually had two dreams. Yeah, Dad, go ahead.
Yeah, I just think that there's another way to look at that Gemara, which is that sometimes you have to do things, and there's a price to be paid. So the Navi says it was Nachon. He did the right thing. Rashi says he did the right thing. And the Gemara says, you know, sometimes you do the right thing and there's a price to be paid. You have to take a tough stand and there are repercussions. I mean, Israel was absolutely lambasted for going into the Church of the Nativity. They paid a huge price for it. And any time, you use any kind of military solution to a problem, there's always a huge price to be paid. So, you know, the Davidic dynasty and the descendants of Shlomo, Yoshiyahu, and others paid a price for this action. That doesn't mean it was the wrong action.
Okay, so that I think is a very provocative reading of the Gemara, that, you know, this was like an acceptable price to bear. But again, you know, these things are, I think they are to some extent up for debate. So
I've heard that the Talmud is a very subversive document.
Okay. Okay. So I think that maybe a good place to sort of bring tonight's conversation to its conclusion is to note that there are two parallel but sometimes intersecting ways of Shlomo honoring David's legacy. And I think that this entire chapter, in a way, really forces Shlomo to choose, in a sense. There's no question that David's dream was to build the Beis HaMikdash. And there's no question that David's standing as an Ish Milchama was a problem. It was a problem vis-a-vis that goal. And Shlomo is supposed to be to those ends in Ish Shalom, right? We know this week's parsha, right? The last section of the parsha deals with the stones of the Mizbeach, Lo Sivnes and Gazis, Ki Char Becha, Hinafta Lava Techal Aleha, that nothing in the Beis HaMikdash can be made with the sword, right, with iron cut, because it's a place where violence is anathema. So that's one aspect of carrying out his father's vision. The other thing that David yearned for was a dynasty, right? A powerful dynasty, something that had never been achieved before. And Shlomo felt that to do that, maybe threats had to be treated with, you know, what we would call extreme prejudice, you know, kind of what Herb you were discussing before. So is it possible to achieve these two visions of David at the same time, a dynasty and the Beis HaMikdash? So Shlomo here seems to be erring on the side of a more aggressive approach. And he's certainly claiming that this will be in the broader interest of Shalom, and this will be in the broader interest of his father. But I think it's questionable. Last week he ignored his mother, and he ended up killing his brother, his father's son. Is that really necessary? Well, Shlomo felt it was. Batshev obviously did not. And this week he kills Yoav, his father's nephew. He kills Shimi. And the question is, at this point, who's really the Ish Damim? You know, Yoav killed Avner and Amasa, and Shlomo has now killed Adoniyahu, Yoav, and Shimi. Right. So, you know, if you're keeping actual score, it's a good question. Well, I guess we could say Yoav killed Avshalom also, so maybe it's 3 against 3. Sam, let me give you the last word. Oh, Sam, get on mute.
I'm just wondering out loud, even though it's not mentioned, what might have been the role of Natan here? He was also loyal to David, and maybe he's the whispering in the ear of Shlomo who to get rid of to buttress the dynasty. I mean, I don't know. He could even be the man who ratted on Shimi to Shlomo. I'm just wondering. It's not mentioned, but I'm curious about that, because often the Melechim had to work hand in hand with the prophet, you know, of the day.
Yeah, so I would tell you
that could be compelling, two compelling personalities, but
right. Yeah. So I would submit to you that Natan HaNavi is not mentioned, so it's purely speculative. Certainly not in the context of telling Shlomo what happened with Shimi. But if I were to guess, I would say that Natan would be very troubled by this. Remember, why did Natan get involved? And we talked about this, I think, we're up to number 7 in the Malachim series. I think we talked about this in week 2, Natan's gambit. Remember, Natan was the one who not only dealt with David in terms of the Bathsheba prophecy in that whole episode, but he was the one who told David to go ahead and build the Beis HaMikdash. Then Hashem comes to Natan HaNavi and says, David's not the one who's going to build the Beis HaMikdash, but there's going to be this son, Shlomo, and he's going to build the Beis HaMikdash because he's going to be a man of peace. So if I were to guess, and nobody can do anything but guess here because there's just no evidence, right, I would say that Natan HaNavi would be alarmed, because what's going to be with the dream of the Beis HaMikdash? Is this the Ish Shalom, as we say, El Hanar Hazehit Palalti? Is this what we really were looking for? Now, and Shlomo's claim is that this is all justified, and his claim is that this is all perfectly reconcilable with his father's idea and his father's ideals. I'm not so sure myself. I think that he's paying a very, very, very high price in terms of being the one who wants to build the Beis HaMikdash. What I'm ultimately really interested in, you know, just to sort of get the end game out there, is by the time we come, in approximately 10 years, to the end of Sefer Melachim Bet, according to the curriculum that I've laid out. So Wait, the Beis HaMikdash ends up being destroyed. It doesn't last. Right, that wasn't part of the plan. That's the end of Sefer Melachah. And I'm really interested by that. And, you know, it's easy to... I think the conventional wisdom is, you know, everything started off great, David, you have Shlomo, and then as time went on, things kind of went off the rails. What really intrigues me is to think about it in a little bit of a different way, is to what extent can it be said that by the very time the Beis HaMikdash was built, the seeds of its destruction had been sown, because Shlomo is consolidating his melucha in literally the most violent manner possible. A person could say he had no choice, or that this was the best choice. You could certainly say that. Some have argued tonight. I wonder about these things. I think the Gemara and Sanhedrin understood, you know, in the most literal sense, is saying Shlomo was acting every bit the Ish Damim that Yoav had been. And what Yoav is saying to Shlomo, you claim to be representing your father here. I don't remember your father standing for these things. Yeah, Sam, I think you wanted to.
No, I'm just saying, you know, I agree with the Ish Damim aspect of Shlomo here in his early reign, but for consolidating his kingdom, as the years passed, he did not so much by Milchama, I believe. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was through his many marriages of different nations and consolidating his kingdom through that kind of, so to speak, making a peace with the other nations by bringing them into the fold through marriage. He had like how many wives, I think.
No, Sam, you're absolutely right. All I'm pointing out is that, you know, one of the, you know, people make it seem like everything is unforgivable today. That's not true. But one of the few things in life that really is irreversible is killing somebody. Because, you know, they're dead from that point on. So it's even if you could say a little later on, you know, Shlomo sort of modified his approach, I don't think it's inconsequential, especially in light of my sister's observation that the Navi seems to be packing these all together and say, this is how Shlomo consolidated his kingdom. And I'm just posing the question.
Well, I'm not saying that it necessarily justified,
right,
you know, killing, yeah, you know, especially if you look at the magnitude of the infractions like Shimi versus the magnitude of the punishment, it doesn't quite go together, it doesn't fit, but...
Right. It seems to be...
I'm not excusing that.
Right. It strikes me as disproportionate.
Disproportionate, yeah.
Yeah, but again, you know, people can debate that. You know, Rashi, I think, is on the other side of that issue. Okay, so I know we went a little bit over, but... You know, these are tantalizing discussions. And so, God willing, we'll pick it up there next week. I just want to remind anybody,